From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Mike Arnold, and this is The Exchange. Before Ethan Allen and the Green Mountain Boys changed things in 1777, many of Vermont's towns were actually part of New Hampshire. The skiing community of Killington was one of them. Now the town wants to go back to the Granite State. This month they held a town meeting in Killington where they voted to secede from Vermont because they're tired of rising tax bills. Residents in Killington are attracted to the Granite State because of its lighter tax burden. But is this the only difference between Vermont and New Hampshire? Today on The Exchange, we're comparing New Hampshire and Vermont, and we'll take your phone calls. The number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. If you're from New Hampshire, what do you think of your home state? Would you like to move to Vermont? Who knows? Call and let us know. The number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. But right now, to kind of get some perspective on this, we're going to check in with David Lewis. He's the town manager of Killington, Vermont. David, welcome to The Exchange. Sorry, David. Welcome to The Exchange.
Hi. It's nice to be here.
Okay. Sorry about that. So is this a succession thing in your town all about taxes?
Well, it's all about taxes. It's not so much the fact that we're paying a huge amount of taxes to the state of Vermont. It's as much that we feel the assessments are punitive and unconstitutional in the way that they were done, and that we haven't really received any justice on getting any of the changes to make it a little less onerous.
I'm sure that this is something that you considered long and hard before finally making that decision.
We actually worked through the system in Vermont for 8 years, legislatively, through the executive branch, and through the legal system. And it wasn't until this past summer that the Vermont Supreme Court overturned, in a real political decision, a decision at the Superior Court level, which had previously deemed the methods that the state used as unconstitutional. After that decision, the Board of Selectmen basically felt that there really wasn't any alternatives available for us.
Now, there are some people in Killington who are saying that some of the early town founders would be rolling in their graves about this whole thing. What do you say in reaction to that?
Well, there's a lot of things I'm sure that people who were here a long time ago would be amazed at, not just in Killington, but in the whole state of Vermont. The state has changed a lot in the last 30 or 40 years from being one of individualism and less government to being one of the most liberal states in the country and one of the largest state government bureaucracies on a per capita basis of any state in the country. So I don't think it's so much us. I think it's the state that's changed.
Well, if Killington were to become a New Hampshire town, do you think it would change in any way? Do you think you'd lose something?
Well, we're not going anywhere. We're still here. We're still in the same location, the same geography, the same people. But I think we would be under a different set of laws, a different set of rules. Hopefully, we would be treated more equitably, and we would also have of a less tax burden.
Now, if this is successful, would you miss being a Vermonter?
Well, there's always a great deal of satisfaction in being known as a Vermonter and being a native Vermonter. But again, at some point, when you look at the alternatives and you look at what's available to you, there didn't seem to be much alternative left.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Okay.
David Lewis is the town manager of Killington, Vermont. We're talking today about Vermont versus New Hampshire on The Exchange. You can join the conversation. The number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Joining us in studio for the rest of the program is Stu Wallace. He's a professor of history at the New Hampshire Technical Institute. Welcome to The Exchange.
Thanks.
And also on phone from his office in Burlington, Vermont, we have Frank Bryan, professor of political science at the University of Vermont. Bryan is also a historian and has authored several books, including Real Vermonters Don't Milk Goats. Frank Bryan, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
Good morning. Hi, now, Frank Bryan, from what we heard from David Lewis in Killington, did some of this ring true with you, Frank Bryan?
Oh, a little bit. What's kind of interesting is how serious Dave sounds. When this really is kind of funny, and it's a joke, but you do have to understand his concern. I mean, the Act Act 60, as Vermonters know it, under which Killington now suffers, in my view, is blatantly unconstitutional. In fact, I debated in the State House on the side of impeaching the judges that handed it down. So I think one understands, one feels their pain. But that's about as far as it goes. The town hasn't any right to do this. The legislature this morning, before noon, if it wanted to, could dissolve Killington into four parts as long as the governor would sign the bill. So it's kind of fun and cute, but it's not going to go anywhere.
But this sounds very much like Vermont in a lot of ways, though, doesn't it? Aren't Vermonters pretty big on these kind of movements, secession and things of that sort?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, I debated the Supreme Court justice that handed this down in 1991, when Vermont celebrated its bicentennial of joining the Union, on whether or not we ought to stay in the Union. We had state-supported debates in seven Vermont towns, public debates, with a vote following, and all seven towns voted to secede from the Union.
Hmm.
But, again, this was kind of tongue-in-cheek, in a way, and it because it does reflect this notion that Vermonters are rugged individualists, and in many ways there are. So I think Killington and Dave Lewis is certainly tapping into that spirit.
Now, Stu Wallace, is this a spirit that you would find in New Hampshire?
Oh, I think, yeah, you've seen a lot of it recently. I mean, New Hampshire tried to annex the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard for tax reasons, and that didn't work, although we got all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court on that one. And there have been, I mean, during the in the wake of Claremont II, when we started to collect some property taxes at the statewide level and redistributing it, which is similar to what some of the Vermont towns are looking at, then you have this, you had people riding out there in boats threatening no taxation without representation, which wasn't quite true, and hearkening back to the American Revolution, which, as it turns out, was a time when about 36 New Hampshire towns tried to secede from New Hampshire. So, you get some of the same stuff happening over the tax issues, and there's a lot of that rugged individualism, and some would call it cantankerousness, whatever, that's left in spite of the fact that we have changed dramatically as a state over time.
Now, it sounds to me, Sue Wallace, like New Hampshire and Vermont are pretty much the same then.
Well, I sometimes wonder if Killington wouldn't be jumping from the frying pan into the fire. I mean, let's face it, you know, tax statutes, if you don't like them, there's a problem that every time a legislature meets, they can change, and so you got to be careful what you do in the name of taxes, because somebody can come along and pull a change on you. In fact, New Hampshire, our general court actually voted not too recently, in favor of an income tax, which didn't make it. But it's kind of fun to watch it, and it's fun to watch the spirit and watch the issues. But I'm not anticipating that we'll be sending over pallets of New Hampshire license plates to Killington soon.
Now, Frank Bryan, what do you think? Do you think this just demonstrates more that Vermont and New Hampshire have a lot more in common than anything else?
Well, I think Stu's right. He's right on. And another, he knows more about this than I do, I'm sure. But even though Vermont was created from New Hampshire with the New Hampshire grants, there was an attempt during the Revolution, when Vermont couldn't get into the Union because the Union wouldn't have us, to create what was known as the Eastern Union, which would be a bunch of towns around Hanover. It would be centered in Hanover, which secede from Vermont as it existed, and some New Hampshire towns, Haverhill, Lyme, all those towns would join, and for 3 or 4 months there was actually a little valley kingdom forming there.
Yeah.
Killington's got the problem of distance, but no, I think, you know, Vermont and New Hampshire really are remarkably different politically, and it's a conundrum for political scientists. You know, Robert Frost, when he wrote his poem, New Hampshire said anything you can say about Vermont can be as well said about New Hampshire, except for their mountains. And New Hampshire's Vermont's mountains stretch straight and true, he wrote, but the New Hampshire's curl up in a coil. He also said that we were like two oxen under the same yoke. And then geographically and historically and culturally, that's true. But, of course, Vermont abuts the rural Berkshires to the south, and New Hampshire abuts the greater metro area of Boston. And from that, I think you see some differences.
So Stu Wallace, is that a good...
Oh, that's a big difference. I mean, our proximity to Boston has really put everything in New Hampshire south of Boston into southern New England. And we often say, as you travel north, when you get to Concord, you're finally hitting the dividing line between northern and southern New England, because the landscape really changes. And it's becoming even more so now, as we're becoming more heavily weighted population-wise in the southern part of the state.
We're talking about Vermont versus New Hampshire on The Exchange today. The number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. You can join the conversation. If you're a Vermonter, what do you think of your home state? If you're from New Hampshire, what would you think about your home state? Would you rather be part of Vermont than New Hampshire? Do you have funny stories about the two states and their long history? Well, call, and you can make comments. You can have questions. All you have to do is call 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Stu Wallace is here. He's a professor of history at New Hampshire Technical Institute. And Frank Bryan is a professor of political science at the University of Vermont. And Killington actually has an interesting history in Vermont history, doesn't it, Frank Bryan?
Well, it recently changed its name to Killington. It used to be Sherburn. And but most Vermont towns do. when they talk about its involvement with New Hampshire, remember we all were involved with New Hampshire in the beginning because New Hampshire was the source of the New Hampshire grants. And Vermont threw off that, but at the same time, as I said before, that made a lot of Vermonters along the Connecticut River really nervous. I tell you, the Connecticut River Valley is intriguing. I myself, for instance, was conceived in Vermont up in the little town of Canaan, but was actually born in New Hampshire across the river in jail there in the Coos County Almshouse. It's the only place that had a four-bed hospital and a four-bed lockup. So I've had to go through life being a New Hampshire citizen, born in New Hampshire, and so I have to call myself in Vermont that I'm an out-of-stater, see, because I spent the first 4 days of my life over there.
So,
and I grew up in Newbury, you know, looking across the Connecticut River at Mount Mooselock and that great range of the White Mountains, and it's so neat living in Vermont because you can see New Hampshire so well, and New Hampshire's so pretty, up in the north anyways.
Now, Frank Bryan, you've been looking across the river at New Hampshire a lot. If someone were to ask you one big difference between Vermont and New Hampshire, what would that thing be?
Well, in terms of its politics, it is more conservative. Vermont has always been a lot more radical. In terms of its topography, though, it really is the White Mountains. They're different in their formation. They're different in the soils that they produce. They were certainly different in their settlement. New Hampshire is higher than Vermont, but not quite as big. But Vermont was settled thoroughly throughout, and New Hampshire was not, mainly because it's rugged. I mean, people in New Hampshire have a lot more rugged terrain north of Plymouth, thereabouts, than we do in Vermont. Yeah. Vermont's more pastoral.
Well, Stu Wallace, would you say that's probably one of...
That's true. We've always had that north-south problem in New Hampshire, and that the south was relatively easy to get to up the Connecticut or the Merrimack or the Piscataqua watersheds, and the north was tough. In fact, we were so slow in settling New Hampshire that if the rest of the country were as slow as we were, I think we'd just be getting to about Cincinnati, Ohio right now. It took us about 200 years to get up north.
We're talking about New Hampshire versus Vermont today in The Exchange. You can join the conversation. The number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Rick from Woodstock, Vermont, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. I'm so pleased to hear that somebody brought up the distinction between southern New Hampshire and northern New Hampshire. I think that the dividing line of Concord and south of Concord really makes that southern part a piece of suburban New Hampshire, suburban Boston, rather. And I grew up there. I was born and raised in southern New Hampshire, and now I'm fortunate enough to live up here in Woodstock, Vermont, which I chose despite the fact that we, too, are a donor town. And, you know, there's a substantial tax burden on me. I guess my question, though, to the people of Killington, and I was hoping that the gentleman from Killington was still on the line, is, you know, if it's so bad, why not vote with your feet and move to New Hampshire?
Well, he's not still on the line, but my guess would be that he doesn't want to move, but he isn't happy with Vermont. It sounds to me like you would not vote for a secession in Woodstock, Rick.
You know, I'm a part of a community here, and the community is broader than Woodstock. The economies of New Hampshire and Vermont are very different. Our tax base, based on our tourist economy, is substantially different from that which is, you know, urban.
I think we're losing you, Rick, but we appreciate that phone call. It sounds like Woodstock's not too far from Killington, and Rick is saying that if you like New Hampshire, you should move there. Stu, any response to that?
I think most of the movement tends to be westward, not eastward. We don't have a whole lot of people from Vermont coming back to New Hampshire. A lot of people, obviously, in the Connecticut Valley kind of go one way or the other because those towns have a lot in common. Noel Perrin made the comment periodically that the big difference in terms of the countryside, New Hampshire and Vermont, is that Vermont kept its stone walls, and it's probably much better at keeping its open spaces. Part of that has to do with how they fund highways in Vermont, and part of that has to do with just that we're that much closer to Boston, and traditionally, really since the 1820s, have had all these options of working in mills and industrial sites, and right. Hence it was easier to abandon the farm if you had a cash job somewhere in Lebanon or Manchester or Nash or whatever.
And Frank Bryan?
Oh, that's absolutely right. I just point out to the caller that Woodstock is not typically Vermont. If you were to ask a Vermonter what the most atypical town in Vermont, it would be Woodstock. New Hampshire's Donald Hall, I'm sure Stu knows, yep. is a very funny and a great poet and essayist, and he once wrote a great essay on Woodstock, Vermont. The caller would ought to read that. But the other thing about the differences in terms of agriculture, that's absolutely true. Others point to the actual soil differences, that the White Mountains of New Hampshire produce a more acidic soil that's good for scrub pines and that kind of stuff. But Vermont has more alkaline soil from its Green Mountains. And by the way, the White Mountains of New Hampshire actually tip over into Vermont up near Canaan. So Mount Monadnock in Vermont is really in New Hampshire's mountains. But and that was better for the dairy industry, and I love Noel Perrin's comment about the stone walls. Absolutely true.
So you would say rather than there being something in the water in Vermont, there's something in the soil in Vermont.
Geologists have pointed that out consistently that there was it's true that Vermonters like to farm better, but as Stu says, we didn't have the options that New Hampshire had in terms of mills and industrial development along those waterways, and so. But on the other hand, the soils and the topography of hill and dale, rather than great mountains, produced little communities where farming hung on and produced, as Dick Winterson of Dartmouth says, who's written scholarly work on the differences between the two states, a much more liberal pastoral agrarian tradition in Vermont.
We're talking about Vermont versus New Hampshire today on The Exchange. You can join the conversation at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. Paul in Shrewsbury, Vermont, welcome to The Exchange.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, yes.
I'm actually on road. I'm listening to the radio from the car and calling from a cell phone, traveling through New Hampshire at this point.
Drive carefully.
I am. There's actually the road from Killington to over to 89 here was quite tied up with some accidents related to the snow.
Yes, you have a question, Paul?
Yes, just a side issue perhaps, but I'm curious if one of the people on air could address it. And that's that, isn't there a history of secessionism in the state of Vermont, where not too long ago there was a small movement, however small, to secede from the Union?
Thanks for that call, Paul.
Okay.
I believe that it may be appropriate for Frank Bryan to respond to that a little bit. We mentioned it a little bit earlier.
Yeah, that briefly, that was the movement in 1991 that I referred to. The state of Vermont actually bellied up with some money to sponsor these debates, kind of as a joke, you know. And then before we have the birthday party celebrating the union, we ought to vote on whether or not we want to stay in. And it was embarrassing for the state, and all seven towns voted against it. But even earlier, Vermont did not participate in the War of 1812, for instance. We were very secessionist at that time. Vermont, for even in the Civil War, Lincoln fought the Civil War to save the unions. He agreed that said that he wouldn't end slavery in the original southern states that had it. But Vermont fought the Civil War, by the way, at a rate far exceeding nearly any other state, for exception maybe Ohio, to free the slaves, basically, and only secondarily to save the union.
Now, what do you think it is about Vermont that makes people more likely to be cantankerous in that way?
Well, I think it's the same thing that makes a lot of New Hampshire people the same way, and it's disappearing. It's that a small agricultural base produces people who make day-to-day decisions on their own about their daily lives. We see this in town meeting, and it's part myth, but there's a lot of reality to it, that the yeoman farmer makes decisions on a daily basis, I'm repeating myself, that are really important, and he develops a sense of individualism and cantankerousness because of his lifestyle.
Stu?
Well, and in the case of New Hampshire is actually one of the least agricultural states in the Union. In fact, the Granite State's also one of the least mining states. We don't do much mining or farming, and what little farming we do probably is up more in the Connecticut Valley, but it's not something that is done to a large extent in the state, and that really hasn't been the case in terms of where most people live in New Hampshire since starting in the 1820s. It's that big industrial base in the South, which we didn't necessarily talk about with our tourist promotion, that really has been, you know, paying people's bills and employing people and bringing in lots of non-farm people from not just north of the border, but from other European states. So it's, in fact, from 1880 to 1980, New Hampshire actually was above the national average in terms of foreign-born. And it was the industry, and now it's other things that are bringing people to the state.
So it's interesting. Frank Bryan, in Vermont, it seems like it's kind of the opposite. It seems like, for example, the IBM, which is the major employer in Vermont, is at the top part of the state rather than the southern part of the state.
Yeah, we're top heavy up here, but that take a look at the map. I mean, it's again, in Frostbaum, he talks about us being like a two wedges, splitting wedges, and but we never did have the kind of industry that New Hampshire had. We like to point to a lot of manufacturing in Vermont in the 19th century, and we did have a lot, but it was in tiny firms. I mean,
all right. Well, we're talking about New Hampshire and Vermont on The Exchange. We'll be back in just a moment, but first we're gonna take a quick break. Look forward to talking to you more about that.
More on why Killington, Vermont wants to become part of New Hampshire again coming up in just a minute on The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. And coming up at 10 this morning on The Diane Rehm Show, a closer look at the partisans' battle over a judicial nomination. 9:30, good morning, I'm Dan Kogan. Support for NHPR comes from our contributing listeners and from Vintage Kitchens of Concord, enduring designs that balance clients' needs with the home's architectural features. Online at vintagekitchens.com. From Orrin Reno, whose healthcare attorneys provide counsel to hospitals, doctors, and healthcare organizations throughout New Hampshire. And CompuCare of Peterborough, providing software solutions for learning disabilities with sales and trainings for schools and individuals. Information at 924-7664. This is NHPR, news and information for the Granite State.
Thank you. This is The Exchange. I'm Mike Arnold, in for Laura Kanoi. Tomorrow on the program, we'll take a look at the upcoming presidential campaign as both Bush and Kerry get into full swing months before the election. That's Tuesday on The Exchange, but today we're talking about Vermont versus New Hampshire. We're using the town of Killington, Vermont as a jumping-off point to talk about the benefits of both states. And you can join the conversation. The number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. With me today is Stu Wallace, professor of history at the New Hampshire Technical Institute, and Frank Bryan, a professor of political science at the University of Vermont. He's also the author of several books, including Real Vermonters Don't Milk Goats. I hope you'll apologize, Frank, but I can't stop from mentioning the name of that book.
I know. It's one of my books that gets all the attention on it. None of the scholarly works ever do it.
I know. Sorry about that, Frank. No, but anyway, 1-800-892-6477 is the phone number. Sharon in Peterborough, welcome to The Exchange.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm just wondering, you said a couple times you referred to southern New Hampshire as a suburb of Boston. I'm wondering what you think of Vermont as becoming a suburb of New York.
All right. A lot
of people feel that way now.
Sharon, thanks for that call. Frank Bryan, people are saying that Vermont is becoming a New York suburb. How do you react
to that?
Well,
the neat thing about Vermont is it's really kind of hard to get to New York from here. We have this joke in Vermont, you can't get there from here. Now, you can get on 91 and head down through Bridgeport and all that, or you can go west over on 87 to Albany, but it's difficult in both ways. So that I don't see any real danger of that, but I think what the caller may be referring to are New Yorkers and New Jersey folks moving up to Vermont, in which case, I don't know you couldn't call that secession or whatever it is. The influence is strong. In fact, it's been happening to Vermont very strongly since about 1960. Between 1830 and 1940, for a century, Vermont led America on out-migration. It was a place to get the hell out of just as fast as you could, and most people did. But now it's a place to come to. And there's a kind of creeping imperialism of newcomers. A lot of Vermonters, we call them Flatlanders, they call us woodchucks, that may be taking over the state from within.
So have you seen an impact of that on life in Vermont?
Oh, sure. And that's what Donald Hall was referring to. In many ways, New Hampshire, and maybe Stu disagrees with me on this, but has resisted that. New Hampshire people are still a little bit more practical overall, and maybe even, I don't know the word, tough-minded, realistic, but Vermont is in danger, if we're not careful, of becoming kind of a theme park. A lot of people in a derogatory way say that we're a theme park of the 1960s. There was an article in Playboy, not that I'd read it, but someone said it to me.
Somebody told you about it.
Yeah, in 1968, called Taking Over Vermont. And the author made the point that if half of the people that were at Woodstock simply went across the border to Vermont, they would control the state and could have elected Abby Hoffman governor.
Interesting. Now, Stu Wallace, there seems to be a sort of different migration into New Hampshire, isn't that? I mean, there's still a lot of people who move into New Hampshire from somewhere else.
New Hampshire's grown in terms of numbers. We have actually doubled in population since 1960. But the question is, how much of a change does that bring? In fact, I think right now our general court actually has all 424 of them. I think the majority are from somewhere else. A lot of that has to do with people being retired and finding time to go to our general court. The question that comes up in New Hampshire is, how much are these people changing the state, or how much are these people coming to New Hampshire because there's something they think they like about New Hampshire, and they want to, in essence, reinforce a stereotype that they've heard about the state. And so, in essence, they're coming up to New Hampshire. They've heard that this is a nice place. It's rural, even if it's not that rural, and they wind up living in a cul-de-sac with a bunch of other nice suburban homes, just like all the other ones they left in Massachusetts or New Jersey. And they, in essence, try to reinforce the myth of what they think New Hampshire's about. And some people have discovered that some of the more conservative elements of in New Hampshire are actually the ones who've come here more recently.
So if you were to draw a distinction between New Hampshire and Vermont based on what both of you have been saying, would I be over-stereotyping it to say that Vermont is sort of the lefty mecca and New Hampshire is sort of the righty mecca?
That might be one way to put it. In fact, some of us have wondered if, in fact, if you look at the voting records of towns that are these so-called bedroom communities in New Hampshire that have were once sort of dinky little towns, but now they're the homes of half-million-dollar homes and up, or the meccas for them, they very often do tend to vote fairly conservatively, and particularly on the tax issue.
Frank Bryan, any thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, I think that isn't a bad way to put it at all. And what Stu mentions in terms of the intentions and then the reality of these newcomers. In Vermont, the intentions are quite leftist. People that came here in droves after the 1960s, they came to live in a small town where they didn't have to lock their car in their yard. They could send their kids to a small school. They could go to town meeting. They could live the idyllic rural life, get a chainsaw and a horse and all that business. And then they find out once they get here that life's really pretty miserable a lot of the time. It's cold, it's wet, it's a long winter. And so they began living a lifestyle that's remarkably similar to the one that they left behind in New Jersey and New York. And that's what is kind of both bemusing to Vermonters to watch the transformation, to watch them get the horse and the chainsaw and burn wood for about 5 years and then go back to oil. And they want to get the back road paved because they discovered that actually it's pretty dusty in the summer. And so the reality of the geography, to me, in northern New England is the great protector of local cultures in the long run.
We're talking about Vermont versus New Hampshire today on The Exchange. You can join the conversation at 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. George from Elliott, Maine, welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I have a totally different topic, which is that I'm happy to hear that at least there's some discussion of what Europeans or other countries which have gone through various territorial changes called territorial reform. In other words, another issue really in northern New Hampshire is why are there three states? I live in Maine. I've come from New York. I've lived in Maine for 37 years, but I spent a great deal of time in New Hampshire, and I lived there for a while, too. Maine is kind of out of this whole equation. A large part of Maine is unsupportable economically. An argument could be made for some kind of fusion. I'm not saying this is going to happen tomorrow. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying, in principle, opening up the boundary issue is worthwhile in some ways. Parts of New Hampshire, parts of Maine, York County, should be part of New Hampshire in reality, I think. And New Hampshire has a long history of defending its boundaries in the most odd way, as we see also from the business with the shipyard and Kittery and other controversies. New Hampshire's had more boundary controversies than you can shake a stick at.
Now, this might add another hour to this discussion, but thanks for that call, George. Stu Wallace, should Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, should they all just be one state?
Oh, I think geographically they wouldn't hold together. You can't go east-west, and also Maine is so much, it's huge. It's another world. There's more land, I think, in Maine than all the rest of New England combined. Maine itself is also, of course, divided. Folks up in Aroostook County will say that the state line stops at Bangor and that there really is a different state when you start moving from there. And for some of us, it takes a while to get to Bangor. So Maine is you can't drive across it. And there was an effort, certainly in the 1740s and 50s, to make New Hampshire and Vermont, basically it was supposed to be one state. And the whole rationale for getting Eleazar Wheelock to put his Indian school, later Dartmouth College, where it was right, because the governor at the time thought that would be the middle of New Hampshire. Well, we all saw where that one went.
Frank
yeah,
Bryan?
I think that the caller made a great point. It is fun, I think, useful, and seriously useful to talk about boundaries. For instance, there really is no geophysical excuse for Vermont. I mean, if you did things in a bioregional way, you'd probably take everything west of the Green Mountains the Champlain Valley in an exit to New York and maintain the integrity of the Champlain Valley. Conversely, everything east of the Green Mountains, the Great Connecticut River Valley, in order to maintain the bioregional integrity of that region, probably should be in New Hampshire. That's one point. The other thing that's interesting to imagine, as some have, I forget the name of the author. I'm getting, once you get 60, everything goes. But the book was, I think, called The 13 Nations of the North American Continent. And what he suggested was that Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine should join with Quebec and the Maritimes to form one nation there. And that nation would have a lot more integrity than the binational and multi-state conglomeration that we have now.
Now, Frank,
I don't know what people would think about.
Yeah, do you think that would go over very well?
Actually, as late as the 1930s, the great historian Arnold Toynbee said that with the number of French that were coming into New England, that eventually the farmers of France would retake New England, the land of the Puritan, just as we had taken it back in 1760 when he took Quebec. Didn't work out that way. Nice try, but he did also suggest that maybe we ought to somehow make a blend here because there really shouldn't be that separation between us and Quebec.
In fact, Toynbee, if I could just add to that, he once in his brilliant history of North American continent, the only thing he said about Northern New England was, and this is almost a direct quote, that the three, he said, the three little states of Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont. No, of Northern New England, including Maine and New Hampshire, never even mentioned Vermont. But those three states were above what he called the optimal climatic area of America. And as such, it contributed little or nothing to the American experience.
Oh, boy. Well, that's
apart
a completely different
on
topic.
You and your book, Arnold.
Yeah. Well, we're talking about Vermont versus New Hampshire on The Exchange today. The number is 1-800-892-6477. That's 1-800-892-NHPR. John from Stratford, Vermont. Welcome to The Exchange.
Hey, thank you. I want to say something Vermont does better and something New Hampshire does better. Be a little fair on both. First of all, I think Vermont's a little bit better about facing straight on its problems. I think whether you look at balancing its own budgets for months, much better than New Hampshire. If you look at dealing with its educational crises or civil unions, Vermont has managed to face those things head on. And whether you agree with it or not, come up with a livable solution. What New Hampshire does better, I have to say, is on dealing with finding solutions for the White Mountain National Forest compared to the Green Mountain National Forest, and finding a way of allowing and incorporating timber harvesting in the White National Forest and still meeting environmental concerns, whereas in Vermont we're still struggling with trying to find a way to provide a way for loggers to make a living and use that natural resources at the same time balancing the environmental needs.
John, thanks for that phone call.
Okay.
Frank Bryan, does that ring true with you?
Gee, there's a guy trying to make peace between the two states. Yeah, I think that's true. But again, of course, the White Mountain National Forest is more of a coherent national forest. I mean, you guys have got in New Hampshire that the deer are so much bigger, and it's more, it's such a wilderness up there compared to the farmscape Vermont topography. Quickly, the other thing, I think the caller's right about civil unions and education, but everyone should remember that the reason in both cases that Vermont did this was that our Supreme Court told us to. In neither case was this a grassroots revolution. This was a very liberal court that forced the legislature to adopt these principles.
And so do you think that the things like what we're hearing from Killington is sort of reaction to that?
Well, certainly the tax issue is. But I get calls again and again from around the country. Why was Vermont the first state to promote civil unions? And, of course, as a Vermont promoter, I want to say, well, it's because we've always been very tolerant, and we have. And all that's true. But no one campaigned for civil unions in Vermont. Originally, it was that the court said that our Constitution required it. And then I think, to our credit, we went ahead and did it. but it certainly wasn't a grassroots uprising over here.
Stu Wallace, what about those comments about facing problems in New Hampshire versus Vermont?
There's some truth. I think the problem we face in New Hampshire time and time again is the question of not whether we're right or left or conservative or liberal. The problem is finding consensus. We are a state that is divided geographically. We're a state that is we have been divided economically, divided in lots of different ways. And you really see the difficulty in finding consensus when you see 400 members of the general court. It's easy to say no to something. It's easy to say you don't like something, then try to get 400 people to say what you do like, and it all falls apart. And so we find ourselves facing stalemates and halfway solutions because of this whole question of consensus.
We're talking about Vermont versus New Hampshire today on The Exchange. You can join the conversation at 1-800-892-6477. Greg from Canterbury, welcome to The Exchange.
Well, hi. I wonder if our guests have much information on the Vermont Social Service Network. I know that in New Hampshire that the system is really stressed, and if you're living on the margins of society, you can fall through the cracks pretty easily. And I wonder, you know, for folks who wish to join New Hampshire from Killington, you know, if they're thinking about the differences there, you know, if you're well, if you're middle class, you know, those are issues I think that need to be discussed here. And I'll take my response off the air. Thanks very much.
Greg, thanks for that phone call. Frank Bryan?
Well, I mean, Vermont historically has been known for spending a lot more on social services in New Hampshire. Dick Winters of Dartmouth has an interesting thesis on that. He argues that it's because we adopted a graduated income tax and then a very progressive income tax in the 1930s, which always just produced for Vermont money, increasing tax revenue without raising taxes. And so since there was a pot of money in Montpelier available, we just developed social services. But the other thing that's interesting about that is this, that, and I'm not sure about the specifics, but Vermonters that are honest, take a look at New Hampshire services in many areas, not only social services, and wonder how they do as good a job as they do without the tax structure that Vermont's always had. And critics in Vermont will say that we must be wasting money because New Hampshire isn't that bad, given the fact it simply has not had historically these broad-based taxes.
Stu Wallace, any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's a big issue here. Thomas Williams, a novelist, late novelist of UNH and Durham, used to make the comment that New Hampshire is a wonderful place to live unless you know, you're poor, you're elderly, you're sick, or whatever, in which case you're left out. And that has often been a criticism of New Hampshire. But as Frank is right in saying, there is an other side that says, well, but somehow without that big pot of money coming in, that income tax money coming in, how do they manage to hold it together at all? I think Colin Campbell, for instance, at Dartmouth has been one of those who said that UNH is actually, or that New Hampshire has done the better job here. As one who's been involved heavily in the disabilities field, I see on the one hand in New Hampshire some very progressive thinking. We were the first state to actually shut down our state school per se and to go more to a family-based system. But the question, of course, arises, are we going to keep that? Are we going to keep up the resources and support? It's one thing to be progressive in thought. It's another to then actually come up with a system that works. And that is a very much debated subject at this very moment in New Hampshire as to whether we're going to see massive cuts to the point maybe the system won't work. You know, stay tuned. We don't know.
We're talking about Vermont versus New Hampshire on New Hampshire Public Radio, and number 1-800-892-6477. Rick from Putney, Vermont, welcome to The Exchange.
Thank you. A fascinating topic, and one that I've pondered greatly, living on the border here in the Connecticut River, and I've lived on both sides of the river. And one thing that's interesting to me is how folks project their stereotypes on the same person. I moved from Walpole, a kind of a conservative burg, over to Putney, which is you know, deep in the granola belt here in Vermont. And the folks in when I was in Walpole, I was always moderately suspect as kind of a hippie left winger type. And then when I came to work, I was viewed as sort of this conservative right winger kind of fellow. And I would really get kind of confused. I traveled through space and time, you know, from 1869 to 1969 every day, and it's just interesting how the labels, when we're confronted by a complexity of human personality and character, we jump to these labels. And New Hampshire and Vermont are so convenient, it intrigues me, that phenomenon. I wonder if your guests have any comments on that, or rather your speakers.
Okay, Rick, thanks for that call. Frank Bryan.
Yeah, well, I think he's right. Stereotypes are stereotypes because they're stereotypes, and there's so many exceptions. But there's always truth behind them too, and there's a little truth there. For instance, in Norwich, it's always been my kind of contention. Maybe Stu knows differently, that the professors at Dartmouth like to live in Norwich and work at Dartmouth so that they can say that they live in Vermont, whereby they really don't. You know, it's all part of that Upper Valley union up there.
Yeah, I think that's right, actually. There's a lot of that, you know, okay, Dartmouth is in New Hampshire, but when it's convenient, we're going to say we're from Vermont and associate ourselves with them. And that's true. But a lot of the stereotypes, you really have to go beyond the state per se, and you start breaking it into pieces and sections. Eugene McCarthy, when he lost but almost won the New Hampshire primary back in 1968, followed it up with a fun article in, of all things, I think it was a travel section of the New York Times, entitled "Let Me Tell You About New Hampshire." And it was funny because he said, well, southern New Hampshire is really a part of Massachusetts, and western New Hampshire, well, that's really a part of Vermont, and northern New Hampshire, well, that's really a part of Maine, which, of course, led you to wonder, well, where did you have to be in New Hampshire to be in New Hampshire? I'm not sure where it was. But I think when you start breaking New Hampshire down into pieces, and I realize people from big western states think it's funny to think of a little state like New Hampshire as being broken into regions, but we are. I mean, our topography is such that this is where rivers begin, and we have little pieces in the Androscoggin Valley and the Saco Valley and everything. And when you break us down into pieces, then the stereotypes actually do have a ring of truth.
Frank Bryan, we're getting close to running out of time with you, because I know you have to run off to a class.
Well, darn, this is too bad. I'm going to get that piece. I had. I just did want to say, too, I'd love to know, and talking about the differences, look what you guys did to our man Howard Dean this year. I mean, we were not expecting that. it just wasn't the scream, was it? I can't believe it was just the scream. I'd love to know what Stu thinks about that.
Well, maybe we can hear that later. But a quick question for you, Frank Bryan, before you take off. Where does Massachusetts fit into this whole thing?
Well, I think it clearly fits into the... as Stu says, the development of New Hampshire and the continuing relationship between Massachusetts and New Hampshire. Stu can talk about that better than me. I mean, you're so close to the Red Sox, and we have to travel so darn far. But it is true that when you drive from southern Vermont down into the Berkshires, nothing changes for a long time. You're still in a rugged hill country west of the Connecticut River, where Daniel Shea raised hell right after the Revolution. But you drive from Plymouth or Concord south in New Hampshire, and fairly soon you're in a different culture.
Yeah, Stu?
That's true. That's absolutely true. And
well, I'm off to class, guys. I've had a good time, and thank you very much, but I do have to meet those students.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much, Frank. We appreciate your time. Frank Bryan is a professor of political science at the University of Vermont. Bryan's also a historian and commentator for Vermont Public Radio, and has authored several books, including Real Vermonters Don't Milk Goats, which means that we give the final word to our friend from New Hampshire, which I guess is not unusual for New Hampshire Public Radio to do. Stu Wallace, any final thoughts as we get to the end of this?
Well, an anecdote, and that is that Frank said he actually was born in New Hampshire and felt guilty about that. I mean, I was born in New Jersey, in the Newark, New Jersey area, and as a kid coming up to summer camps here, I used to go up to the town of Lyme, where it was, and I would hear Vermonters and New Hampshire people argue about which was the better state. Now, coming from the Newark, New Jersey area, I had a rough time figuring that one out, because I didn't see any difference at all between, say, Lyme, New Hampshire, and Thedford, Vermont, except that Thedford had a railroad. And it's good to argue these things out. It's good because it gets you to think about your character and what kind of a place you are. As for the Killington question, I suspect this is just an issue that's going to keep on popping up and up and time again. And it's in here in New Hampshire, too. So maybe we'll wind up swapping a town. Maybe somebody in New Hampshire may want to go the other way, and we'll pull a switch.
Now, you said when you were a kid you didn't understand the differences. You've been here for over 30 years now. Yeah. So how do you see them clearer now, or do you think it's still
sort of
a curiosity?
I do see the differences now. It's funny because I give a lot of talks to historical societies, and I'll have to admit I'm from New Hampshire, and the natives will laugh, and then afterwards half the audience will come up and ask me where I lived in New Jersey, because that's where they're from, and I always kid the natives because I say I came here by choice. You're here by accident. I think that I have seen a lot of differences. Clearly, the proximity to Boston has made a change. A big change in New Hampshire from really the early 19th century to the present. And I think that the current in migration is continuing to make a change in the state, even among those who say they don't want to make a change and they want to keep New Hampshire like they thought it was when they came here.
Well, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Stu Wallace is a professor of history at the New Hampshire Technical Institute. And wrapping up the show for today, if you'd like a list of upcoming shows on the Exchange, all you have to do is go to our Exchange page at nhpr.org. That's www.nhpr.org. The Exchange is a production of NHPR, produced by Keith Shields, Rebecca Kaufman, and Ty Fraley. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. I'm Mike Arnold. Tomorrow on the program, we'll be talking about the presidential campaign for 2004, now that the two candidates are settling down. That's coming up tomorrow on The Exchange. Until then, I'm Mike Arnold for New Hampshire Public Radio.